Welcome to Great Australian Lives.
For Tobin Brothers Funerals,
celebrating lives. Here's your host, Laura Turner.
Hello and welcome to another special edition of Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives. I'm Laura Turner. Our guest tonight is a healthcare pioneer. After witnessing the intense pain and fear sick children had to endure during hospital treatment, her own maternal instincts kicked in and she helped to revolutionise the way pain management was approached at Melbourne's Royal Children's Hospital, strategies that are now employed by other hospitals around the country. She is the chair and founder of the Hush Foundation, a not-for-profit organisation working to educate, inspire and enact positive change in healthcare through the arts. It is my pleasure to welcome Dr. Catherine Crock, AM to Great Australian Live. How are you, Doctor?
Very well, thanks, Laura. Good to see you.
Yeah, you too. I'm so honoured to have you on. You've done such incredible work and you're a very, very busy woman outside of your career as well. Now, Kindness Week has just wrapped up and you and the Hush Foundation have been huge supporters of Kindness Week, I know, which is gathering momentum worldwide as part of the Gathering Kindness Initiative. Tell us about why so passionate about this particular initiative in terms of its links to the healthcare system?
Well, Laura, I've had a 25-year career now in healthcare, and over those years, I've seen some good things and I've seen some bad. And I think it was really being affected by the way staff treat each other in healthcare environments can be a bit of a worry. I think we've got something of a crisis in how we all treat each other and look after each other. And in 2010, I was fortunate to travel on a Churchill Fellowship and met with patient safety experts all around the world. And it was talking to those experts that really brought to the fore, it's not just about being nice to each other in the workplace. It's actually critical to how we can be good teams working together and how we can keep patients and families safe when they're in hospital. So to me, we need to be working on the positive. We need to work on what's a kind health system and how can we all pull together to make this system good for the people who are working in it. So how can the organisations be kind to the health professionals? And then that gives the health professionals the capacity to be kind to the patients and families and to keep them safe.
Now, I can imagine, Doctor, that a pandemic would not have helped that issue.
Interestingly, Laura, I think it has. I'm seeing the pandemic as a time for us all to reset and to rethink about how we work in healthcare. In some ways, it's been an opportunity because we haven't been able to just do work as normal. We've really had to think on our feet and change the way we do things. And I think we've also come to realise that the human side of healthcare, the way we all interact and look after each other, is critical to being able to do hard work, particularly in a pandemic.
Yeah, okay. That's really interesting to hear. In saying that, there must be extra stress on, well, we know it's well documented, there's extra stress on healthcare workers. I mean, what are you seeing as a result of this past 18 months in terms of that hardship on healthcare workers?
There definitely has been an increase in the stress. I mean, our work is hard in the first place, but now we've got to wear all this personal protective equipment, which disconnects us from our colleagues and from the patients and families. But we've also got this concern for the first time in our working lives that we might get sick or we might be taking this home to our families. Mm. So I think that is a different level of stress in the workplace, but it's brought to the fore that we need to look after each other and we can look after each other. We can do that part of it better and, in fact, still flourish and have joy in our work.
What initiatives have you put in place as a result of Kindness Week, and what has the response been like to them?
Look, we've had a huge response. This year we've got a huge number of hospitals that have signed up all of their staff to be able to access the resources that we've put up. So we've had a lot of really interesting video conversations internationally and Australia-wide about the techniques you can use and some tips that people could use to help bring more kindness into their workplace. And there's things like David Brewster at Cabrini is working on kindness at handover. So, Laura, every time there's some sort of interaction in a healthcare setting, you need to hand over information about a patient or a family to the next set of health professionals. And that can be done in a very matter-of-fact way. It can sometimes be done with some rudeness and disrespect. Or, as David's found, if you do that with kindness and if you think about the impact on the person who's receiving the information or who's handing you information, it's actually way safer and it's way better for the way that team functions and for how the patient can then progress through the system.
I was just going to say that the flow-on effect to the patient, I'm sure, would be heavily impacted by that exchange. As I said before, it's been well documented that the strain and extra stress on healthcare workers during the pandemic. Do you think it's been a wake-up call as well, though, in terms of the respect we need to show as a community towards the incredibly difficult and, you know, long hours that healthcare workers put into their jobs?
Yes, I think the public have become more aware because it has been something we've needed to talk about. It's sad to me when some members of the public are still abusive to the staff or they don't treat staff well. And I'd like to think that this kindness is a two-way street. To be honest, Laura, we're in this together. We're all in it together. The health workers and the patients. It really makes no difference which side you're on. Everybody needs to be treated with kindness and respect.
I also think, too, as someone who's spent a bit of time in hospital with babies and things over the years, I can't imagine that being rude or nasty to your midwife or your doctor is going to speed things up at all.
No, and there's also been some good studies about that sort of rudeness and what it does to the healthcare workers. And in actual fact, it affects your bandwidth, it affects your ability to be able to concentrate and really focus on what you're doing because you're distracted by that negativity, whether it's come from a patient or whether it's come from a colleague.
Yeah, I can well imagine. We will talk about the creation of the Hush Foundation in a moment, but I want to go back to an earlier time for you when you were the doctor in charge of the day operating theatre at Melbourne's Royal Children's Hospital. You began to realise that it might be a better way to deal with there might be a better way to deal with pain management, especially for children. What kind of distress were you witnessing that was a wake-up call for you in creating those new initiatives?
This is going back a bit over 20 years, and I was a fairly young doctor at the time, and I wasn't in charge of the day theatre. I was one of the proceduralists who were doing bone marrow tests and lumbar punctures on children with leukemia and other cancers. So it's a stressful time for those families. And I had my own children were young at the time. And I think that as a mother, it struck me really hard that these children were repeatedly having painful things done to them. And we were giving them something to make them a little bit sleepy, but it wasn't really numbing their pain completely, and it wasn't making them unaware. The next time they came, they would be even more distressed. So I started to talk to the parents about what this was like and whether they thought there was, you know, something we should be doing. And pretty much unanimously, the parents were asking if their children could go more fully to sleep for the procedures. That's now the way that we do it, and it's made a big difference to the journey for these children that they're way less stressed as they go through multiple procedures and sometimes a three-year journey of cancer treatment.
Yeah. Did you experience pushback in that change, though? Because I can imagine, you know, just from a medical side of things, more heavily anaesthetising a child, going through the ranks of the management of a hospital system and, you know, maybe it's something that's been done for years and you're battling, you know, people who might be stuck in their ways. I mean, did you find difficulty in making those changes?
I'd have to say yes, not everybody thought that this was necessary or that we could put the resources into it to do it this way. But I was able to put a fairly strong case that this was overwhelmingly what the patients and families wanted. And also that if we could set the system up so the children were way more calm all the way through the journey, that actually saves time and money later on. And it saves them being distressed when they have other medical appointments even later in their life. Mm. So there is good evidence from the psychology literature that doing procedures and long-term painful procedures on children can have lasting effects.
Yeah, I can only well imagine. You have helped create such a different atmosphere at the Royal Children's. It is a completely different place now, well, literally, because it's been rebuilt, but also just in terms of the atmosphere, you know, it is such a better environment now. The meerkat enclosure and, you know, all the decoration and you've played a role in that new and better environment. You must feel really proud of yourself for that.
Look, Laura, this has been a, you know, massive team effort, and I would think of myself as a tiny cog in this whole thing. But I certainly think that starting to bring music and the arts into that sort of an arena has made a difference, and it was a gentle way to start some of the conversations about how to make the environment better for patients, families, and for the staff who are working there.
Well, you know, as someone who's only been there briefly, I can certainly say that the Royal Children's is, it can be a sad place to be, but also it is, I think everyone's done the best they possibly can to make it a welcoming experience at least.
I think that's what we're all aiming to do, to make sure that the patients and families feel safe and secure when they come. And we also want the families to feel they are definitely part of the team, so that their input into whatever is being done for their child is valued and listened to, and will act on it so that we can get the best care for their child.
This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives, and Tobin Brothers offer a range of very practical solutions to help you plan a funeral and pay tribute to your loved one. Our guest tonight is Dr. Catherine Croc, doctor and medical pioneer, among many other things, and we'll explore the inception of the Hush Foundation in just a moment. That was a little bit of Dance of the Paper Umbrellas, and this is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Our guest tonight is Dr. Catherine Croc, who as a physician at the Royal Children's Hospital in Melbourne has worked determinedly to implement a raft of positive changes to create a more positive hospital environment. Now, first of all, Doctor, just after hearing that little snippet of that beautiful piece of music, who was behind that and who is responsible for that?
So that piece, Dance of the Paper Umbrellas, was composed by Elena Katz-Chernin, who's the most beautiful Australian composer and friend of the Hush Foundation. And the music's performed by the Tasmanian Symphony Orchestra, another great partner of ours at the Hush Foundation. That music was composed after Elena came into the hospital and experienced the environment there. And then she wrote that music really to reduce stress and anxiety for all the people in the hospital.
Music plays such an important role in doing that. In terms of the Hush Foundation, it was established in the year 2000, as you know more than most. You were already doing incredible work. What inspired you to form that foundation?
Well, that came about from talking to families about what it was like for them when they would come into a hospital setting with a sick child. And a lot of the parents said the sounds and the sights in a hospital, they raise your anxiety, they make you feel unsettled, and how would it be if we could have some music that might help calm us? Now, I knew quite a few professional musicians, and I thought, well, their expertise could help us to work out what would really help. And of course, you'd need to think about a hospital is a very noisy place, and so you need music that's going to sit in that soundscape without actually making it worse and making it just more noisy and difficult to cope. And so over the last 20 years, we've worked with nearly 100 Australian composers who've come into hospital spaces and had this experience of what it sounds like and where their music is going to need to sit to make things better. It's been an extraordinary journey and so exciting to get this outside expertise into our healthcare environment from people who really care about making it better for all of us to work there and to receive care.
Yeah, as a mother of two NICU babies, just hearing that set beeping of the machines now makes me want to throw up, and my heart's in my throat when I hear those machines. So I can imagine, for many parents and the children, but even the medical staff, it would help alleviate some of that very clinical, repetitive atmosphere that you'd be hearing all day and night. And I love that in such a scientific and medical setting, you can bring the other side of the brain and the arts in to help alleviate everybody's experience.
I think that's why this was a bit surprising and different for people to start to bring the arts in. It gets some conversations going, so you'll find out, that anaesthetic technician you're working with this morning, he actually plays the guitar on the weekend. So other parts of people's lives can be brought into the workplace, and it actually normalises some of our relationships, and it helps us to build our teams as stronger teams.
Also, I can imagine that it would help with that relationship between medical staff too, knowing and appreciating the personal side of the person they're working alongside as well.
Yes, Laura, sometimes I think healthcare tries to make us behave as if we're professionals with nothing else going on in our lives that might affect how we come to work, when in fact we're all human and we have our frailties, we make mistakes. And the best way to help each other and to make sure that it all goes well is to put some of those vulnerabilities in front of your team, be honest with each other, get to know each other as people, and then we can all stick together and make it really work well.
Did you have a background in the arts when you created the Hush Foundation, or were all of these projects new to you?
No, look, I've always had an interest in the arts. My parents, my family are really big into music. My dad collected artworks of patients who had done paintings for him or people that he knew. So our house was full of creative things, and it was something that was really encouraged. And I think when I got into medicine and found that these things weren't really part of the fabric every day, I felt like something was missing. So I really wanted to bring part of my home life into my work life, and I found it's just been energising and really quite amazing to do that.
Yeah, instrumental, you might say. It's beautiful that Hush has produced 18 Hush music albums, 3 theatrical plays about healthcare, a children's treasure book and kindness anthology, and numerous concerts as well. So you've been so, so effective and busy. If we put a Hush album on the iPod, or the, is that old fashioned to say iPod now, on iTunes, what would we hear?
Well, you'd hear quite a eclectic, wide-ranging types of music. So we've used some classical music that's been reimagined. So Joe Kindamo, amazing Joe Kindamo, did reimagining of Mozart, and that's totally gorgeous. Paul Grabowski and Tony Gould, other jazz composers, and Andrea Keller. We've had sort of a mixture of classical and jazz put together. There's some orchestral works, string groups and chamber groups, Slava and Leonard Grigorian. It's quite an amazing mixture. And people might think, oh, well, how can such a range of music work? In actual fact, it's because of where the projects come from and the way that the composers have been immersed in the environment to give them the inspiration for what they might write. And each of them comes up with something quite different. But we give them a brief that talks about needing music that comes with a sense of optimism and a sense of lightness and air in the music. So nothing dark, nothing that'll take you to a dark place, but things that will distract and engage your mind, really, and take you to an optimistic place.
Is there a way to quantify, or can you quantify on a medical level, the reaction or improvement, the benefit to a patient from this music being in the around them?
Look, we haven't done any hard scientific data on it. That's reasonably difficult to do. But we know that we can see the effect on particular children and families as they go through the system. And parents telling us, we feel really much more calm and relaxed. And we know that when that's the way it's functioning and the way we put a child off to sleep is really calm, they wake up calm in the recovery. They're calm when they go on to day oncology. And so in individual families, we can actually, you know, get quite a lot of stories about how it's improved their experience. And there is a lot of data out there of the use of the right sort of music to reduce your stress hormones, your pulse, blood pressure, all of those things that calm you and make you feel more settled.
And you, you've worked in collaboration with renowned playwright Alan Hopgood and have written and produced two plays, Hear Me and Do You Know Me? And these productions have been performed in hospitals and aged care settings right around Australia more than 100 times to raise awareness for patient-centred care and communication, patient safety issues. How do older patients and aged care residents respond in comparison to children to this sort of a setting?
We've done some several play performances of the aged care play in actual aged care homes and hospital settings, and it's been fantastic. What we do at the end of the play is we talk to the audience, and so the audience can be made up of staff and the residents who live there, and you get a right there in your face assessment from the residents about whether this is really the reality. And the plays are not all telling the good stories, so we do highlight some of the elder abuse and other things that we know do go on as a way to start the conversations. And I can remember we went to one aged care setting where one of the residents said, that was a fantastic play. We really enjoyed it. And we just want the staff in our facility to know it's not actually about how good the building is or anything like that. It's about how we're looked after with kindness and respect by the staff here.
And that is a big issue. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Our guest tonight is Dr. Catherine Crock, medical pioneer, producer of music and theatrics and an advocate for culture change in healthcare. We'll be back with her in just a moment.
There's a boy in the corner who's sitting alone, looking around for his invisible cloak that will shield him from the world. There's a girl in the playground who's angry and sad, wanting to feel good but just feeling bad. So she rages at the world. Sticks and stones may break your bones, but words can hurt you too.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals Celebrating Lives. Tonight, our guest is Dr. Catherine Kroc, Chair and Founder of the Hush Foundation, a not-for-profit organisation working to educate, inspire and enact positive change in healthcare through the arts. What we just heard there was a bit of Sticks and Stones with Lior. Beautiful piece of music again, Doctor. You must be quite proud of all of these.
Oh, look, it's been wonderful doing that music project over the years. And Sticks and Stones comes from the album A Piece of Quiet, which was Lior, The Idea of North, Elena Katz-Chernin, and some of their friends on instrumentals. And that album came about actually by we sat down with children and asked them for their wisdom on some of the, you know, what really matters to them. And it was great hearing what they thought about kindness and how to treat their classmates, etc., what they were worried about and how they felt they could find their brave if they were worried about something. So there's some amazing songs on that album that are really beautiful.
Now, I want to know, Doctor, about you. We've talked so much about other children and their experiences, but where did Dr. Catherine Kroc grow up and where were you born?
I was born in Oxford when my parents were, Dad was studying his orthopaedics in Oxford, so they brought me back to Australia when I was about three. And I've grown up in Melbourne and been here virtually the rest of my life, except for another small stint in the UK when my husband and I were doing some training in London.
So you had a pretty typical Aussie upbringing in Melbourne?
Definitely, yes. So holidays at the beach in a rented house down at Sorrento, picnics up in the Dandenongs. Yeah, pretty normal Melbourne childhood, I think.
I grew up in the Dandenongs. It's a beautiful spot to have a picnic, absolutely. And were you always the kid playing doctors and nurses? Was that always the aspiration for you, or did it? Was there a career shift? Did you want to be, I don't know, fireman?
No, I always wanted to be a doctor, and I think that was because there was a lot of medical talk around the dining table, mum and dad both being medical. And Dad's identical twin brother also being medical. It was in the family. And in a way, I think I can remember saying to mum when I was about 10 or 11, I'm going to be a doctor. What else is there to do?
And what did she say?
I think she was quite happy. She, being a doctor herself, I think she knew that it wasn't going to be an easy road, particularly for a young female, but absolutely worth it when you get there in the end.
Were your parents and your uncle your main influences, or did you have other mentors along your journey?
Look, they were my main mentors, and I would always come back to thinking about how they treat people in their practices. So my father and my uncle were both very well respected, Dad as an orthopaedic surgeon and my uncle as the first professor of ophthalmology in Australia. And I think anybody who remembers the two of them will always talk about their kindness. And so that for me was a great inspiration, and I've hung on to that all the way through.
Yeah, that's obviously been really influential to you and your incredible career in instilling kindness in healthcare environment. Do you have fond memories of those early years? I mean, as you sort of referred to before, your mum thought it's not going to be easy. And it isn't easy, those early years training. They're very long hours and very hard on the trainee doctor, aren't they?
Yes, look, I think we had very good support. I went through Monash University and then the Alfred Hospital, and great support as you go along, but the hours were hard. And as a young female, the training years intersect with when you're wanting to have your children. And in my day, there was no part-time training. There was no maternity leave. Our jobs were taken year by year. So the year that I got pregnant, that meant I just couldn't accept a job for the next year. And so you had to drop out of the system and then try and come back in again when you were ready. I think we've come a long way. There's way better opportunities for part-time work and workplaces that are understanding we need to support our trainees better. So that's good.
Yeah. How, I mean, it's probably a silly question, but how did you manage that? I mean, I know you have a few children. You have talked about, you know, how everyone in the family has to pitch in and keep, you know, that the cogs turning in the family home. But have such a high pressure job outside of being a mother, which is a high pressure job. I mean, you must have had some really stressful moments in there.
There were some stressful moments. I think we've got five children, and my husband also works in a busy medical practice as a paediatrician. But we did it together. We didn't have grandparents around. My parents were living in London and Rod's parents were living in the country. So we had a mishmash of daycare and some nannies and each of us sort of trying to juggle things. But it's, you know, it's a good-natured family. We were at times reasonably messy, so we couldn't keep the house perfect. There were some things that just had to go by the wayside. I think it was quite good for the children to be involved and to feel that they had to pitch in and they were part of holding this whole busy thing together. So all of the children from an early age were up helping me do the cooking. And so by the time they were 9 or 10, they could actually do the family meal. And so everybody wow. took their turns in things like that.
Gee, I've got to get onto that. That sounds amazing. At the moment, the children helping you cook, they're not helping. I'm glad to hear too that you were messy.
But I think you need to let it get a bit messy. Get the children up at the bench from the time they're 2 or 3. They can start to chop things up with you under supervision and is a really good investment for later on.
Yes, I just have to invest in some patience first. 2009, you the prestigious Australian Churchill Fellowship Award to study the benefits of family involvement in effective healthcare by examining patient and family-centred care models within the US and the UK. That must have been a fascinating experience.
That was a wonderful experience and a big leap for me to take because the children had just got to that stage where I felt I could leave home for a short while. I hadn't been to any conferences or anything for many years because it was too busy at home. And so it was quite scary to get on that plane and go away for a couple of months. But absolutely brilliant when you got there. The Churchill is an amazing opportunity and like a calling card that opened doors internationally. And you'd meet some extraordinary people and they would say, oh, you also need to meet this other person who's working in the same area. And I had the privilege of spending time with Bev Johnson, who'd started the international patient-centered care movement in the US and is an absolute icon. And to travel with someone like that and see at the ground level how patient-centered care could really revolutionize hospital care was just amazing. And then I spent time with Don Berwick and Lucian Leap, who are incredible in the realm of patient safety. And they were in those days talking about the joy in work and how we need to bring joy and flourishing to the healthcare workforce and improve our relationships so that the care that we give is much safer. So that was really pivotal to me to hear from these experts that they were concerned about the culture and that it wasn't just something I was feeling in my own environment in Melbourne, but this was an international issue that needed to be looked at.
Yeah, absolutely. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. And in these challenging times, Tobin Brothers offer a range of very practical solutions to help you plan a funeral and pay tribute to your loved one. Our guest tonight is Dr. Catherine Crock, doctor and medical pioneer, among many other things. And more with Dr. Catherine Crock in just a moment.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives. Our guest tonight is Dr. Catherine Crock, medical pioneer, humanitarian, producer of music and theatrics, and also an environmental enthusiast as well. Gee, you're a busy lady, Doctor. And just on that last point I made, environmental enthusiast, you've been involved in coastal revegetation projects for many years at Cape Patterson, which is a beautiful part of Gippsland in Victoria, obviously. gee, that's a nice change of environment from inside a hospital.
Look, it's an important one for me. It's really my break, a mental break and a physical break. And I just love getting out in the outdoors and doing something useful with my time. So I joined the Cape Patterson Residents and Ratepayers Association many years ago. And we started to have a look at the weeds and the problems of, you know, lack of Indigenous vegetation around our coastland. And it's an absolutely beautiful coast. It's the Bunurong Marine Park. But there were a lot of introduced pine trees and other weeds and things. So as a group, we got together and thought we could spend our weekends working on this. So we applied for some grants and were lucky enough to get some Parks Victoria grants and other revegetation grants. We took out the pine trees and we've spent the last 15 years revegetating, and we've put in thousands and thousands of trees. There's actually, you know, small forest has come back where we've been able to do these plantings. And we would get maybe 25 people come every month, hail, rain or shine, and they help us to do the weed removal and then plant the Indigenous vegetation, and it's been really rewarding.
Yeah, I can imagine that must be, it is a beautiful piece of rugged coastline. So to have that natural, proper natural environment come back is, you know, you're a real asset down there, I would imagine. How do you do it though? I mean, five kids, do they go with you? I'm sure they're grown up now, but you're never not a mother, are you?
No, they very often come with us. Certainly when they were little, they did. And they were part of the Nippers program and the surf rescue and the bronze medallions at the surf club and planting trees. Yep, they've all been part of that.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. That's it's good that you've passed that on. You're, as we have established, a very busy woman, but what is next on the agenda for you, you know, beyond 2021, which has been a trying year in itself?
Well, the Hush Foundation's got a very exciting music project coming up, so that is going to be marvellous next year. So prior to all of this COVID, we had started working with six amazing Australian singer-songwriters. So Megan Washington, Kate Miller-Heidke, Missy Higgins, Naomi Crellin, Emily Wurrumurra, and Mama Kin. So those six incredible young mums came with me into maternity units and mother-baby units, and we talked to the staff and we talked to the families about the challenges of parenthood and what it's like when you're trying to do your best with young children. And each of the singers has written some songs that we're going to release starting actually in a couple of weeks' time. So the first song, one of Kate's songs, The Healing Tree, will be available from the end of next week. And then in 2022, we'll bring out the whole album, and it's absolutely beautiful. It's called Nightlight. And the backing band is, once again, our great friends at the Tasmanian Symphony Orchestra.
Oh, beautiful.
So it's
so exciting.
Very special work coming out next year that'll keep us fairly busy.
I can imagine. And if you're listening tonight and you want to know more about the Hush Foundation and Catherine's work, you can check out the website at hush.org.au, and you can also purchase the Hush albums via that website as well. So I'd be excited to see the take up of that album for next year, Doctor. And you can also find out more about Kindness Week and the Gathering Kindness Initiative at gatheringkindness.org. Thank you so much for being with us on Great Australian Lives. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much, Laura. Very nice to talk to you.
And if you've enjoyed our chat with Dr. Catherine Crock tonight and you'd like to share it with a friend, of course, subscribe to the Great Australian Lives podcast and join me the same time next week when we celebrate another great Australian life for Tobin Brothers Funerals Celebrating Lives.
You're listening to Great Australian Lives with Laura Turner for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.